Hey there. Welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm John Steinbacher.
And I'm the intern, Roger Blanco.
We are Lisa-less this week. She's on vacay with the fam, a very well-earned vacation for Lisa Brault. She'll be back with us next episode, but this time around, just the dudes talking sports with you.
Yeah.
How cliche is that?
Yeah, don't bring that up. I thought we were going to skate along without mentioning that. Dang it.
Yeah, well, we can't avoid it, so might as well just get that elephant in the room out there. But we've got a great episode for you. Coming up, it is, of course, March Madness week with the NCAA basketball tournament on the men's side starting on Thursday. And we've got a real ESPN insider to join us coming up, John Gassaway, who's also a University of Illinois graduate. He will be with us to break down some things in the brackets, and we'll also get his thoughts on the first season of head coach Brad Underwood's tenure at the University of Illinois. So that conversation's coming up in just a bit. John Steinbacher has our controversy this time around, taking a look at the NFL Combine. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that's on the way as well. And, of course, we'll have our status update coming up at the end of the episode. But first, let's talk about some news here from the last couple of weeks. Spring training, of course, is well underway. Cubs and Sox opener is less than 2 weeks away, or just about 2 weeks away, I should say. A big name came off the free agent board, especially for Cubs fans. Jake Arrieta is a Philadelphia Philly.
Weird.
That look. And they changed their logo, too. It's like the bell now instead of the P.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Yeah, so seeing Jake just in red is a little bit unusual.
The signing, and we have mentioned this before. Obviously, it's very, very late for such a big name free agent to be signing. But the big news about the signing was, speculation was that Jake was looking for about 6 years. He's 32 years old. This is where you want to sort of cash in. You've played your chips, and you want to cash in. His deal is only 3 years. It's got a pretty good $25 million a year, which is I think the highest this year for any free agent, but it's only 3 years.
Yeah, there are a couple of there's some different options and things at the end of that deal,
right.
But I think they're player options if I remember
okay.
right. So, but yeah, there's a couple of $20 million years tacked on at the ends, and plus a bunch of incentives. It's one of those deals that we're seeing this offseason. A lot of complications to it, but in terms of guaranteed money, it's 3 years, $75 million. So, we'll see how Jake does.
Yeah, that's not. I'd take that money for sure. but that leaves, I guess, Cubs fans to question. They'll see how Darvish pans out and see how Arrieta does this year, and see if that decision to let him walk pays off. We'll see.
Yeah, that's kind of the natural comparison that they'll have, is comparing Darvish and Arrieta, and I do think the Cubs are at least in discussions with Arrieta for similar terms to maybe what they ended up offering you, Darvish. And I think at that point in free agency, Jake Arrieta and his agent, Scott Boras, were very much holding out for more than that.
And, I think Arrieta obviously has had the better season or two overall. But if you look at wear and tear, if you look at consistency and age, by all those measures, you probably have to say that Darvish is the smarter choice. Now, whether it pans out in the end is anybody's guess. He could get injured, or maybe he's tipping pitches. But you really can't complain, I think, if you're a Cubs fan, that they got Darvish over Arrieta.
And I guess the other thing that I've been watching in Cubs camp, they've been trying to find who their leadoff hitter is going to be, and it looks like Ian Happ is basically saying, yeah, that's mine. He's
just got to find a place to put him.
Yeah. It's just a question of getting him in the lineup every day. But he's, I think, had 5 home runs this spring, 3 of them leading off games, 2 of those leading off games coming off of Madison Bumgarner. So he's looking really good this spring. Of course, it's spring training, and we all know that the stats don't matter too much. But you are kind of looking for guys to maybe step up and claim roles, and certainly Ian Happ is making a name for himself this spring.
Yeah, I think the Cubs have a good problem. They have a lot of good players that are sitting on the bench, like Albert Almora. That guy's really good defensively, and what he can do against left-handed pitching. And so is with Ian Happ. He had a full season under his belt last year, and he seems like he's getting comfortable with the organization, and seems to be hitting a lot of home runs for them. So that's a good sign for the Cubs, which sucks to say for me. So,
well, give us a White Sox update. What's going on over there? They're in Arizona too now.
They are. Yeah.
I know they played the Cubs, I think, last week, and Eloy came back. He was hurt and then hits a go-ahead home run in the eighth inning. So that was a
Oh, I didn't hear
good,
about that.
Yeah, that was a good feeling. And Dylan Seastead, another part of the Cubs package for Quintana, is pitching very well. I think he has 3 starts. He pitched probably like 6 2/3 innings, giving up 0 runs and 9 strikeouts. So the future's looking very bright for the Sox.
It is indeed. And as a Cubs fan, I get a little tear in my eye when I see, you know, Eloy and Cease doing so well in spring training. But just have to keep in mind, Quintana's a really good starting pitcher, and the Cubs got an arm they needed. They really needed that in the rotation, not only for last year in the middle of the year, but they've got him for the next 2 seasons as well. So, other things going on this week, in addition to the NCAA men's basketball tournament, March Madness, there's also some other March Madness going on in Cleveland, Ohio this weekend. Recent guest of the podcast, Isaiah Martinez, will be in action this weekend at 165 pounds. He's the top seed in that weight class. He did win his 4th Big Ten championship. I think just the 16th wrestler ever to do that in the Big Ten's history. The first from the University of Illinois to accomplish that feat. And now Isaiah will try to win his 3rd national championship at 165 pounds. And Roger, a couple of other Illini wrestlers are fairly highly seeded as well. Maybe they can make some noise this weekend in Cleveland.
Yeah, we have a number 3 seed, Mike Kars. He's wrestling 141 pounds. And number 4 seed, Emery Parker at 184. They seem to be the best in their weight class. And Illini also have 2 other qualifiers, and Dylan Duncan at 133 pounds and Travis. Can't pronounce that last name.
I think it's Piotrowski.
Piotrowski,
all right. I think that's how you say that.
All right, but yeah, at 125 pounds. So looks like a good group of guys, and hopefully we can do some damage this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see how they do.
And we slag, you know, in all deference to Josh Whitman and the rest of the Illini Athletics colleagues, we slag on the major sports quite a bit, but they have been getting some good news. Lovie Smith just got the highest ranked, I believe it's a linebacker recruit, and since 2007 for Illinois,
yeah,
a 4-star.
Yeah, a guy out of Texas, and I don't have his name right in front of me here, but he was top 100 guy out of Texas, highest ranked recruit, I think, since Aurelius Benn came to Illinois under Ron Zook. So, and, you know, Aurelius is still making money in the NFL.
Yeah, and the Underwood just got 2 more recruits for basketball, much needed big man. And there's some other stuff cooking there. Of course, there's been some transfers, but we'll see how that all shakes out. And the baseball is ranked.
Yeah.
Yep.
And their home opener is this afternoon. We're recording on Wednesday here, taking on Milwaukee.
I believe women's tennis is doing pretty well.
I think they're number 6 in the country. Yeah. I think the men are number 6 in the country.
The gymnastics teams continue to do well. So, you know, there's good news around. Let's all look on the bright side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Illini sports is on the rise.
Very good. Very good. Well, that's kind of a look at what's been going on with some news and notes around the world of sports. When we come back, we will take a look at the NCAA men's basketball tournament in more detail with University of Illinois alum and ESPN insider John Gassaway. Stay tuned. That's coming up next here on The Bandwagon. NCAA March Madness, the men's basketball tournament, getting started this week. Actually, already got started last night with the first of the first 4 games in Dayton, Ohio, with Lipscomb and St. Bonaventure picking up the first wins of the tournament. But the main field of 64 will get started on Thursday. Here to break it down for us is ESPN insider and University of Illinois graduate John Gassaway. John, it's great to have you back on the bandwagon.
Thank you for having me. It's always good to be back in Champaign, even virtually.
Absolutely. It's an interesting field this year, I think, in large part because, you know, most times you have a pretty good idea of who maybe the top maybe 2 or 3 favorites are going into the tournament. But I think if you look at this year's field, John, there's really quite a few teams that could win this thing.
Yeah, especially as of yesterday when the team that I had previously picked to win it all suffered a key injury. So that's the way it works in March. And it's apropos that we're having this conversation right before the tournament starts at the time of maximum hubris and knowledge. And then by Thursday evening around dinner time, everybody's brackets will be just in shreds, and something absolutely insane will have happened, and we'll march forward from there, pun intended. It's the nature of the tournament. I love it every time, and you know, my bracket goes up in flames just like everybody else's. Hopefully, you know, relatively less than everybody else's because I'm supposed to spend my time studying this stuff. But the game always wins in the end, and it's fabulous to watch.
It really is. You know, the team you mentioned, I think you had as your favorite going in is Virginia, who won the ACC regular season title by several games and then won the ACC tournament as well. But they did lose a key player going into things here.
Right. And ordinarily, if you saw an ACC team, if I told you before the season, we're looking at an ACC team that's 31-2 and won the ACC by four games, won the ACC tournament, you'd say, boy, that's a slam dunk national champion pick. And people hesitate with Virginia because of their NCAA tournament history in recent years. But losing DeAndre Hunter is a step back. My custom in situations like this would often be to say, you know, he's only playing 20 minutes a game anyway. We know what Virginia looks like without him. Just look at any Virginia game now for the other half of that time. But the fact is that Virginia just has an 8-player rotation. This brings that down to 7 players. And he was carrying a heavy workload on offense during his 20 minutes. So it particularly makes a difference on that side of the ball. On defense, Virginia is still going to be Virginia. You won't see any drop off there. But you might want to take a look at, if you did, like me, have the Cavaliers going all the way to San Antonio, or even if you didn't, however far you had them going, you might want to look at walking that back by about a game or two, because over the course of 6 games, losing one of your 8 best players can be expected to make a difference.
Yeah, John, you talk about that injury. Do you think that with that injury they can get over the hump? Because like you said, they have pretty much every March they seem to stumble a little bit. And I have them losing in my bracket in this week 16 against Arizona. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, that is a power-packed half of the South. If you think about it, we've got 6 major conferences, and the 3 winners of their major conference tournaments are all in that half of one bracket. You know, you've got Virginia, Arizona won the Pac-12 tournament, and Kentucky, of course, won the SEC tournament. So I would only point out that just to get that far, Arizona's going to have to beat – somebody's going to win the game between Davidson and Kentucky, and that's going to be a really good team. People are kind of underselling Davidson at the moment. Kentucky obviously playing its best ball. And then the funny thing about Arizona, whom I love too – I mean, I've bought that ticket, and we tend to forget that just 5 days ago they were taken to overtime on a neutral floor – by a team that's already gone from the NCAA tournament, namely UCLA. So, I mean, I'm as big a believer in DeAndre Ayton as anybody, but it's not like these guys are absolute invincible force of nature. It's going to be really fun to watch in a very strong South region.
So, obviously, for the fifth, sixth, whatever year in a row here in Champaign-Urbana, we are not in the tournament, but we're still Big Ten country, I guess. Obviously, 4 teams this year, and I know people at Penn State and Nebraska are complaining, but what do you think about the 4 Big Ten teams? They're all relatively highly ranked. They all certainly have their flaws, but are any of them potential Final Four national championship candidates?
Yeah, I mean, these are nice seeds, first of all. So, I mean, they've got the... they've got the ability and the opportunity. I do feel like, in addition to the usual suspects, the Michigan State, for anybody who didn't check on the everybody at ESPN made their predictions, and Michigan State was the most popular national title choice by a nose over Virginia, and that was before the news of the Hunter injury. So the Spartans are real popular. I feel like the Big Ten team that no one's talking about is Purdue, and maybe their problem is that everybody was talking about them a month ago when they were on that incredible win streak. But I think that stock might have been sold a little too quickly and a little too early by everyone. That is, on paper, just a fantastic offense. Carson Edwards, you know, is up there with Kata Bates Diop or Miles Bridges or anybody else you want to name as the best player in the Big Ten by my lights. And they've got pretty good size down low, that, you know, in the form of Isaac Haas, obviously. So that's a tough team with a good seed and a fairly good path. And in addition to all of the just compliments that Michigan State is receiving, I feel like people might want to take a look at Purdue as well.
John, you know, I'm sure we've got some listeners here who, you know, maybe aren't following college basketball as closely as some of us in this room, but they're going to want to enter their bracket contest. If they're able to catch this conversation before that deadline at 11 a.m. Central Time tomorrow, just what are some general tips that you'd like to give people who, you know, maybe don't follow college basketball all that closely, but want to fill out that bracket this time around?
Yeah, two general procedural tips that I will carve in stone, and they'll still be true next year and the year after. One, take this to the last minute, not just because of the example we saw of breaking news where a key player was injured, although that, of course, does matter. But also, I just find that it's a large task to do an entire bracket. There's 32 games in the first round alone, and a lot of those are 7-10s and 8-9s. Those, by nature, should be tough to pick. And you just kind of got to let them rest against your brain for a day, you know, and see where you net out. The second thing is, don't, as we say in the biz, don't go all chalk. And what that means is don't simply pick the higher seed every time. That's not going to go well. You're not going to go perfect the other way, but there is no way to go perfect. So you might as well fail the smart way. And that is with a more traditional blend of seeds. There's only been one NCAA tournament where all four number one seeds made the Final Four, and that was in 2008. So avail yourself of the wealth of information that is out there now. Make some good informed lower seed picks, particularly in the first round. And those are what can separate you in your bracket. Even though the team you pick in the first round probably isn't going to make it to the Sweet 16, the fact that you got that game correct can pay dividends later on. So those are the two tips that I would offer.
Obviously, this is sort of like other things we're discussing, sort of a fool's errand, because obviously any single player could quickly leave the tournament in the first round. But are there any... Obviously, you know, you have your Trae Youngs and other big name basketball or players. Is there anybody unheralded that you expect to sort of spark a unexpected team that will sort of, you know, catch the spotlight that happens every year? Obviously, like I said, I know it's not an easy question to answer, but are there any players that aren't maybe spotlighted yet that you expect to rise to the top?
Well, if it's not in too much in violation of the spirit of the question, I'm going to talk about a player on a two seed. You wouldn't think that would be an unheralded player. It's a pretty elite seed. But I don't feel like Gary Clark of Cincinnati is a household name by any means. And if you look at what he's done as a senior, it's more or less the perfect season. To play for Cincinnati, you've got to earn your chops on defense. This is one of the better defenses we've seen come down the line the last few years. So he does that, and then he's just been brilliant on offense as well. If I can do a little plug at ESPN.com, I made a listing of the top 25 players. And speaking of fool's errand, that used to include Aaron Holiday, and then he got bounced out of the tournament in the first game. So I had to revise that hastily. But where I'm going with this is Gary Clark is very, very high on that list, along with some more usual suspects, name like things like Ayton and Bagley and what have you. So give a look to Gary Clark with the Bearcats.
Oh, yeah. You talk about like high seeds. How about any like sleeper picks or lower seeds that you think can make a big run in the tournament?
Glad you asked. One example of what I was offering as a tip to build up your points in the first round And this is kind of regionally specific for my hosts here. Just up the road a ways in Chicago, Loyola is better than people who have not been following the ins and outs of the Missouri Valley Conference this season might realize. They face a really good Miami team in the first round, but coming from my laptop, that game is actually pretty close to a coin flip, even though it's an 11 seed playing a 6 seed. The Ramblers are excellent on defense, and that's pretty apparent at a glance. But what people might not catch is, even though the offense isn't as good as the D, they make their shots, and that can be an opportunity against a Hurricane team that sometimes can allow some points. So I'll be watching that game with great interest as a instance where a double-digit seed could notch a win. And real quickly, just to touch on a game that we've already mentioned, I feel like people are a little too blasé about, oh boy, can't wait for that Kentucky-Arizona game. Kentucky is a young team, and Davidson is experienced, and they just beat a really good Rhode Island team on a neutral floor to make it this far. This is not head coach Bob McKillop's first barbecue by any means. And if Kentucky does make it to a game against Arizona, they will definitely earn their way because these other Wildcats, speaking of the ones from Davidson, they're a tough matchup in the first round.
Well, John, one team, of course, we're not talking about in the field is the University of Illinois. Of course, we're talking to you from the campus here in Champaign-Urbana. As you look from afar at Brad Underwood's first season as head coach here in Champaign, what did you think? We talked to you a year ago just after John Gross had been fired, and I think I remember you expressing some disappointment that maybe things didn't shake out quite as well as you as an alumnus had hoped. What are your thoughts on Coach Underwood's first year?
Yeah, first of all, I want to emphasize that I'm looking from a close, if that's a word. I watch the Illini with feverish intensity. I don't get to talk about them in my day job as much as I'd like. I look forward to the day when that changes, and I'm talking about them a lot. But the first season was what it was, and the thing that I did like seeing is that there was a correlation between what Coach Underwood was trying to do on the floor and what we actually saw. So often in a first season, you just kind of get lost in this amorphous talk of building a culture and discipline and this and that. For better or worse, Coach Underwood landed on the ground and said, we're going to force turnovers. They forced turnovers. He said, we're going to get offensive rebounds. They got offensive rebounds. And I like to see that. Now, the previous 2 seasons before he got to Champaign, he had players in each successive season. One was Thomas Walkup, and then the next one was Juwan Evans. He didn't have that kind of flair, obviously, this year. And when he does have that player, it's pretty fun to watch what Underwood gets done on offense. And I very much look forward to that day coming. I anticipate that it will, and I am optimistic for the future.
And do you think that player is coming next year in the form of someone out of Chicago or?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing to say about Coach Underwood is that he's done what an Illini fan wants you to do. He went out and what's Io DeSumo? He's like maybe number 32 on the ESPN 100. I
I
mean, he's
think
up
so,
there.
yeah.
So, out of Chicago, in the backyard, I mean, this is just the template, for what an Illinois head coach is expected to do. And it's almost as if Underwood salute smartly and said, okay, he went out. Got that guy, point guard. I'm not going to say that Dosunmu is going to be the difference between day and night. A point guard, by definition, he needs the pieces around him. He needs somebody to distribute to. But again, there's reason for optimism in a team that was better in the kinds of things that I look at, metrics wise, than their one loss record would indicate, and had one rotation senior. So there's grounds for cautious optimism, and I'm signed. I've signed on to that petition most definitely. So I'm watching next year with hope.
And just one final question, and obviously I'm not asking you for any inside details or anything like that, but obviously with the tournament going on, there's sort of this cloud, which is kind of always there, but is there a little more with the revelations about recruiting scandals with the agents and footwear and Patino, of course. Do you expect that will just sort of kind of go away during the tournament and everyone will just be excited about that? Or do you think it will get mentioned? Do you think it's hanging over? Or is it? I mean, personally, I think probably when the tournament starts, it'll just roll. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, 2 points about that. One, and perhaps the salient and most important one, is that this is going according to a timeline dictated by federal law enforcement authorities. And that's a new wrinkle we haven't seen before. So I don't doubt for a second they will have zero hesitance or compunction about interrupting our nice little NCAA tournament if they think they have news. It's not going to matter that it's the latter half of March. If they've got subpoenas or arrests or something, that's going to happen. And that potential is real, and it could happen. That shoe could drop at any time, including and especially during an NCAA tournament. But secondly, in the more traditional sense that you speak of, yes, I mean, what we're going to see is that your prestige media outlets, not now, but in the week before the Final Four, will make the point that, you know, there's this big, huge problem looming, and isn't this terrible? And it is terrible. And I mean, it's terrible in a specific sense that we don't have the time to go into, but basically that we just need to ground the sport in a normal footing where amateurism and professionalism blend peacefully and exist nicely like they do in every other sport domestically and worldwide, individual and team, with the single exceptions of American football and basketball. We can get there and we can do that. But those points will be made in big, heavy think pieces. They deserve to be made. And then exactly as you say, yes, during the games themselves, something spectacular will happen and somebody will win a game as a 13 seed on a three-quarter court shot in overtime. And you can't not talk about things like that when they happen. That's the nature of win or go home basketball. It's spectacular. 67 of those games lure us in every time, and it's about to happen again in 2018.
John Gassaway is an ESPN insider and a University of Illinois alum, also one of the founders of Basketball Prospectus when that publication was in effect for several years back in the 2000s. John, always a pleasure to talk to you, and as always, enjoy the madness.
Thank you, and thank you very much for having me.
Welcome back, and thanks again to John Gassaway for joining us to break down the bracket here, and always great to catch up with John about Fighting Illini basketball as well, despite being graduated for quite a few years. John is still as big a fan as anybody of the Fighting Illini. Time now for some controversy, and it is the season for the NFL Scouting Combine. That always certainly brings up some interesting topics that players are asked about. And John, this year, definitely a head scratcher.
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with this, the NFL Combine is where potential professional football playing draft prospects go, and they do things you would expect. They run the 40-yard dash, they get timed in that, they lift weights, they do all kinds of other sort of agility training. But of course, part of it is to ask the players questions, I guess, to get insight into their mental toughness or I don't know. It's a long tradition, and I'm sure there's some science to back up some of it. But much of it is just bonkers and beyond. Unfortunately, there is also a long history of players being asked sort of personal questions that aren't really appropriate in any sense of the word. This year, former LSU running back Darius Juice was asked about his sexuality, in particular asked whether he liked men, or I believe asked, either that or asked whether he liked women. He also claims that he was asked if his mother sells herself.
Wow.
So this has been happening for quite some time, especially the player sexuality question. The NFL and the Players Association and teams have all publicly come out and said that's not appropriate, that's a violation of all kinds of things that shouldn't happen. But and I think it happened 2 years ago, and it's happened a lot previous to that. Obviously, this is a huge issue in professional sports, especially in the NFL. As far as I know, there's never been a NFL player who's out while they play. There's been a few who have come out afterwards. Michael Sam, a couple years ago, announced before the draft that he was gay, and it was a big deal. But I don't think he stuck with the team, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I think he went to camp with the Rams, I think, when they were still in St. Louis. But I don't think he made their roster, if I remember correctly.
So, I mean, the point here, I think, is pretty obvious, which is if you get asked this question and you say that you're gay, you're not inviting, or that you like men, or that you like men and women, you're probably inviting a little bit of scrutiny, and I believe the implication is that maybe we wouldn't be as interested in drafting you. Darius Juice is a potential first round draft pick, likely. So I mean, it's kind of insane that this still happens. Obviously, I don't think it's announced the team that did it. They've corroborated that it actually happened. I believe there will be punishment for whatever team it does come out for. But it's kind of crazy. And aside from that, like, a lot of these questions are just kind of, they're like, do you like cats or dogs? Do you, what's your favorite kind of fruit? What color is chocolate? What color is melted chocolate? What color is melted butter? What color is snow? I mean, what? And then, you know, there's this whole other thing where quarterbacks get their own special test. I forget what it's called, because, you know, obviously quarterbacks are supposed to be, like, you know, smarter than everyone else or whatever. There's a lot of something going on here. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring it up. Obviously, the main point is, I think, asking about the player's sexuality, asking about if their mother sells it. I mean, it's totally inappropriate. It's been embedded in the culture of the NFL for quite some time. They clearly are working to get rid of it, but I mean, who asked that question?
I don't know. I'm curious how the person who asks that question justifies it in their mind that this is that this is okay, that this is something that they need to know, and that it's going to somehow be of value to them in evaluating a player. I just don't get the mindset that goes into any of that, but. Hey, I'm not an NFL exec, so what do I know?
Yeah, I wonder what, like what these responses, like, do to, like, NFL, like executives. Like, what is their, like, if someone says, oh, this, like you said, if this melting chocolate, if someone says it's this color, are they not going to draft them? Or, like, what's the science behind that? I kind of want to find out, like, what these questions actually mean to, like, a person's draft stock.
Right, and I kind of wonder, like, you know, if you're interviewing for a job or something, they're not allowed to ask you certain questions.
Yeah.
And how does that stuff kind of go out of the window for this? It's kind of a job.
This is,
I mean, so one player got asked if they were planning on getting married in the next 6 months. I mean, you know, some of this stuff might, so, you know, I don't know.
Weird.
And I guess players can't really, like, say, I'm not going to answer that question.
Right. So
they're looking for a job and hoping to get drafted.
Right,
so.
Exactly. And the place you get drafted is it's millions of dollars, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, the incentive is not to, it's messed up.
Right, and I think, you know, the only way that I think players would have any real power here is if they really make this an issue in the next collective bargaining process.
And I commend Darius Juice for coming forward. He didn't have to come out and say anything, and a couple other players have. I think he's in a special position because regardless of what he says here, I think he's still going to be a first-round draft pick. It's the players maybe farther down the line who are either fighting to be drafted or trying to get up higher where, you know, coming forward would probably actually hurt them. So I would be very surprised if he was the only one that got asked this question.
All right. That's our controversy this week, the NFL Combine. John, thank you very much. It is now time for our status update, where we go over some things on social media that have caught our eye here in the past couple of weeks. Roger Blanco, what do you have this week?
NFL free agency.
Oh, yeah.
That just went crazy the last 2 days and even today. Especially I'm a diehard Bears fan. They made a lot of moves to get offensive weapons for our young quarterback, Mr. Trubisky. We signed Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel, and we actually got Trey Burton from the Philadelphia Eagles. He actually threw the pass to Nick Foles.
The
Philadelphia special. So we got a backup quarterback.
Yeah. So don't sleep on the Bears next year.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
I read somewhere that this seems like they're when the Cubs signed Lester, and we're like, okay, we're no longer sort of rebuilding. I've read some things that say that the Bears have sort of decided that this is the time to make their move. Of course, it could have to do with their GM, what's his name?
Ryan Pace.
Pace probably deciding if he doesn't turn things around soon, he's not going to have a job. But, yeah, I think it's exciting. The Bears have been not very good for a long time, so I think Chicago's probably ready to embrace them again.
I'll go next, and I've actually got a couple of things related to Jake Arrieta's departure from Chicago and going on to Philadelphia. One, I thought Jake did a really classy thing. You know, sometimes you'll see the athletes take off the full page ad in the newspaper or whatever to say thanks to
that was written by their agent.
Right, right. That's very obviously written by somebody else, et cetera, et cetera. Jake took a different tack. He actually penned out a handwritten open letter to Chicago. And just very heartfelt, you could tell. Posted that to social media on March 12th, on Monday. And if you're a Cubs fan, I highly recommend you take a look at that and read it. Very cool. The other thing related to that, and I am not seeing the link right now, but there was an artist who put together this video. It's about, I think, 2.5-3 minutes. It's a mix of Jake Arrieta's biggest highlights as a Cub, you know, including a couple of his two no-hitters, his shutout in the wild card game he threw against Pittsburgh, some other highlights from his time with the Cubs. And mixed into that, the whole time he's drawing a sketch of Jake Arrieta on paper that's interspersed in with those highlights. And by the time it's done, it's a really good likeness of Jake, and just, you know, that artist saying thanks as well. So thanks, number 49. Good luck in Philly.
Yep, Philadelphia. I'm sure they'll never boo him.
Never, ever.
So my update is the same thing I will do every year when this week happens, and I think I did it last year, and I don't care. I'm going to keep doing it. God bless Minneapolis native John King for putting together his annual Minnesota State Hockey All-Hockey Hair Team.
Yes.
Which, if you're unfamiliar with, it is the Minnesota High School Hockey Players State Tournament. When they get their introductions, they all have a little bit of flair to their hair, and they give it all they got. And God bless all those young Minnesotans for partying in the back and business in the front. Anyway, I will post the link. I can't really do it justice, but it's the 2018 Minnesota State High School All-Hockey Hair Team coming at you. Check out the links. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Flowing locks everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to meet some of these kids on the street, but...
Especially if they have a hockey stick in their hand.
Yeah, I wonder how long it takes for them to grow that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think...
That's a lifetime effort.
Yeah.
That's dedication to its craft.
Yeah. Right no, there. Really. Some of these kids have been working on it for years. And I applaud John King, because it can't be easy to watch hours and hours of introductions. Although, I don't know, with what he gets, man, maybe it's just a labor of love.
Labor of love, indeed. All right, I think that's going to wrap things up for this episode of the Bandwagon Podcast. Roger, do you have credits this time?
A Bandwagon is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced by Brian Moline and John Stombacher, and the intern myself, Roger Blanco. Regular size thanks goes to Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, and musical genius Automatic Empire, who wrote and performed our theme and other music heard within. Find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where you can stream us again and again, then click all the links and stuff. Better yet, subscribe to the Bandwagon and rate it. in iTunes. But if you don't have iTunes, no problem. You can also find us in Stitcher and NPR One, and we're always working on being available in other places. Follow us on Twitter at BNDWGNPDCST, all consonants, no vowels, to get our tweets. Please add us. We love it when you do. So that was episode 51. We'll be back in a couple weeks for another episode about often strange and always compelling intersections between sports and everything else under the sun. Until then, thanks for playing.